Well, Michelle Forbes is a well-known stage and screen actor in her homeland of Ireland. Now, she's written a novel. It's called Ghost Moth. And these moths may be the souls of the departed, alighting on your skin at dusk if you're very still, or they might be memory itself. Stories from the past hover over Catherine, who is the woman at the centre of the novel. We meet her in 1949 and again 20 years later, and in between, something changes. Michelle Forbes speaks to Kate Evans from a studio in Dublin. And we start with the character of Kathleen as we meet her in 1949.
She's working in the Ulster Bank offices as a clerk. It's quite a mundane day job, but she is involved in a musical dramatic society in the evenings. And they're, at this point in the novel, they are rehearsing an amateur production of Carmen, and she has been cast as Carmen. So there's a lot of artistry within Catherine, a lot of passion within Catherine, and she loves expressing it. And when they're rehearsing, just below them are tailor's rooms, and one of the tailors there, Tom McKinley, has been assigned to measure Catherine for her costume for Carmen and to make it for her. And it is during those fittings that a relationship develops between them. But certainly she is a woman. I kind of like to describe her. Well, Colm Tobin said it. He said the best heroines are passionate and a little foolish. And I think there's an element of that in Catherine, where she is certainly driven by the heart. And there are certain decisions she has to make which have dark consequences to them.
But it's almost as though in the young woman she is in 1949, as if she hasn't quite decided which version of herself to be, so you allow her to dress herself up in character.
That's so true, actually. That's so true, Kate, because she is torn. She's seduced, obviously, by the romantic possibilities with Tom, but at this stage in 1949, she's already betrothed to George, and that side of her, that kind of sensible side of her, is in conflict with this other part of her, as you rightly say.
The other thing that struck me about Tom is that he's a tailor, and in writing and fairy stories, they're often a small character, but you make him vibrant and enchanting, and he drapes her in fabric and he's measuring her, and it's an erotic act. I wonder, is that how you see clothes, or is it part of the theatrical transformation?
I guess I was interested in the, how shall I put it, the touch of a stranger without it being invasive, or the that awakening in someone which is totally unexpected. And the, I mean, I've been through costume fittings myself, not quite like the one I wrote in Ghost Moth for Catherine, but there is a sense of submission there, and there's a sense of yielding. And I just wanted to explore that, Kate, and find out what that meant. And it's a moment where both are, in a way, behaving themselves in their own arena. Tom is measuring her, she is being measured. But through that, it's allowing these other emotions to interplay. And I was just wondering if I could capture that in language and still hold on to the heightened sense of it as well.
Well, there is so much heightened emotion and drama that's going on as Catherine's about to go on stage as Carmen. Things that happen in the wings and in the dressing room, but you only show us one small moment on stage, and all the rest is in the backstage areas. I wondered why you did that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a conscious thing in the sense, I guess I'm also trusting, as often I do myself, fill in the gaps. I'm trusting that the reader will come with me and will actually almost create their own Carmen for themselves if I lead them in the right direction. But actually, it's true to life that so much of the real drama goes on backstage. So that was where I was placing myself as an observer in order to write. And I do have experience to draw on, that kind of frenzied few minutes before you step on stage. And inevitably, anything that can happen will. But again, I was interested to kind of focus on that time before you step out and present yourself to the public in a certain way, what private emotions are in turmoil. And for Catherine, she is in turmoil. that dramatic moment between herself and Tom happens at a moment also where she can't give it her full attention. She has to go on and perform. I was interested in the dynamics of that and how I might put that on the page.
Michelle, you are a professional actor and a successful one, and I wondered if that was another reason why you didn't need to show us the performance, because I kept on wondering how she was going to be able to go on stage and sing when all this other stuff was going on. And so perhaps you infused it with that professional's on with the show sense.
That's very true. But also there's possibly a more selfish reason on my part. I wanted to push myself in terms of writing this book in a way I wouldn't normally. So for me to write about what happened on stage might actually come more naturally and more easily. And it might be a more obvious choice for me to make. But I wanted to make other choices as a writer now, and to see if I could follow that through. I mean, it's amazing because so many people will talk about the performance and it's not actually in the book. So I kind of feel, well, that's great. That response is wonderful, where people do embrace it and they do then begin to build for themselves those pictures. And I think that's the power of literature. I really do. I feel that all that happens within the imagination of the private reader is wonderful. And the responses to the book have been very varied. People will pick different things from the book, and it's quite surprising, but it is that private relationship with the reader and the word.
Well, and I also feel almost as if I'm misrepresenting it by talking so much about those moments that involve the stage, because it's not a novel about grand performance. It's so much about ordinary lives and people, and that matters to you, doesn't it?
Hugely. I really wanted to write about ordinary people and ordinary things, and I wanted to kind of see if I could move the narrative forward by setting these little charges, if you like, about very ordinary things, be it turnips, the garden, be it all the stuff that happens within the family, to set these little charges through the narrative to see if that can bring the momentum forward. And I also, and John Updike was the one to say it, he said, to give the mundane its beautiful due. And I do believe that we all live ordinary lives, but to look at the ordinary fabric of our lives and to look at the detail, it can be quite extraordinary. And people go through all sorts of things in their everyday lives. And so I wanted to bring focus on that within the book, within the Bedford family, between George and Catherine as a married couple, and as them as parents as well with their children. So certainly the period 1969, all those sections within the book focus very much on how this family move through their day and face immeasurable difficulties as well emotionally within their own lives, but get on with everyday life.
And some of that everyday life, the way that it's written, just makes you stop and change perspective on things. So there is a scene involving bees, and there's this lovely description that made me just stop and reread it and check that I'd got it right, when the man who came to get rid of the bees is described as putting on his bee costume, and suddenly we see it in a childlike way, as if he's got dressed up as a bee. And I think you say it's almost like an act of
Act of courtesy.
An act of courtesy,
yes,
to the bees.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that actually was inspired by a real incident where we had bees in the house, and it was my baby son at the time had said that he actually he was expecting the man to come in to sort the bees out in a bee suit. But it's also that connection with humanity and nature, and with us and nature, that I think is crucial throughout the novel. And that's just a little glimpse of it. As you say, the act of courtesy to do the deed, to smoke the bees out. I was very interested in trying to bring those two worlds in parallel, because a lot in the book, a lot is released through nature. In the opening of the book, Catherine and the family are out for a picnic, and they go down to the beach and the children are swimming, and Catherine goes in for a swim and she has an encounter with a seal. So the book opens this way, and she has a near drowning experience. So this encounter with wild nature, this wild animal, in a way is her subconscious coming to the surface, and it's everything that happens in the book after that is a response to that. It's a release. So this relationship with nature in the book, to me, is extremely important.
And there's one terribly moving scene in which Catherine's children, her three daughters, are playing a game with toy houses and cars and dolls, and one of them turns a bus over and says, "It's on its side, burning. There's a roadblock, and everyone needs their IDs. Where does that child's perspective on it come from for you?
I would have been the age that Elsa is in the book in 1969. And again, that was a conscious decision because I wanted to draw on those everyday insidious experiences, which in a way are in the margins when we look back at that time. It's not the front line, but there are all sorts of intimidations that you experience on a daily level, going to school, going to work. Things have changed dramatically now, and I adore going to Belfast, and I've still family there, and it's a fabulous town. It's a bristling, alive city. It's just fantastic. But at that time growing up, we were still battling a lot with attitudes which kind of bound us into a certain way of thinking. I would call it disrespect in a way, that communal disrespect of one another. Going to school could have been a journey which was quite hazardous.
Michelle, your novel slips back and forward between 1969 and 1949 in Northern Ireland. Why those 2 years in particular?
Well, I guess, Kate, it was a very conscious choice on my part. The novel opens in the summer of 69, as you say, and that was it was the time of the moon landing, and it was also a time in Northern Ireland that the civil rights marches had been happening and had been rioting. And the political landscape of Northern Ireland was changing dramatically. It's on the cusp of that that I began the novel. And really what we call now that period, which we name the Troubles, that's, it's set in the cusp of that. And it moves back 20 years to 1949. And that was a time that I wanted to depict the city in a different guise, really. It was a time of comparative stability, political stability, and a peaceful time. And I had heard stories about that time from my father, and about going out to the city centre and the restaurants would be open, the cafes, the dance halls. And as a teenager living in Belfast in a city which felt under siege, that was an incredible idea in my head. So when I began writing the novel, I was very conscious that I wanted to shift between these two time periods in terms of looking at the city. But that became the backdrop for a much deeper emotional journey for the characters themselves.
On RN, Michelle Forbes with the sounds of Bizet's Carmen coming through somewhere on stage there. Her novel is called Ghost Moth, and it's published by Wiedenfeld and Nicholson. And she was speaking there to Kate Evans from Dublin. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN.